Welcome to the Hashtag MoLedge Podcast broadcast from the state capitol in Jefferson City, sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce, Missouri Farm Bureau, and the Sheet Metal Workers Local 36. Now from the state capitol, the Hashtag MoLedge Podcast.
You know what that bell means. It's the MoLedge Podcast. I want to always start off by thanking our sponsors, St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce and the Missouri Farm Bureau. Very glad to be hosted this week by the assistant floor leader in the house, Kevin Austin. Thanks for having us in your office today.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for coming in and letting us talk together a little bit about what's going on this week, Chad.
And squared off with the other assistant floor leader, John Rizzo. Thanks for being on.
Thank you. Actually, the minority whip.
Whip, my gosh.
Yes, gotcha. Thank you very much for having me, and I appreciate
You're always the number two in my heart, so it's different. Your representative, you sat through all the hearings of SJR 39 in the House.
I did,
both
yes.
You and the minority leader. What do you think about how it was handled, and I'm sure you're happy with the end result?
Being in Democratic leadership, we have the opportunity to be ex officios of all committees. So just for the background, so we're able to sit in. We're not able to vote, but we're able to sit on the committee. And I sat in the original hearing, which went until midnight, which was pretty late. I think it was a four and a half hour committee. Had some great testimony. I think the chairman did a good job with hearing from both sides. And then obviously the vote came down yesterday. Was 6-6 and ended up losing and failing on a tie motion. So basically, for all intents and purposes, the bill is dead. I will tell you, I've been here 6 years now. This is my sixth session, and I don't think I've heard a more powerful speech. I don't even know if you can call it a speech, more of a testimonial than what I heard from Representative Jim Henson. I mean, it was just, I don't think there was a dry eye in that room.
I think the quote, "I don't need a law to be a Christian," may be repeated in the Capitol going forward.
You know, the thing about his, not only was it from the heart, but a lot of the stuff he said, I think, was just very true and applicable to when we deal with issues of religious and religious freedom. And I think it's on YouTube. I would invite people to just look at it. I mean, because it was all live streamed, of course, and listen to what he said. Because, you know, Jim Henson is not a softy.
Yeah.
And you know, it would be different coming from a person that was a little softy or whatever you want to call it. He's a stoic man, and to see him kind of break down over this issue was powerful.
Representative Austin, is the Senate changes the way they do business more and more to be more like the House, do you think in the future you're gonna have to be the new saucer that cools the tea?
Well, we're more than willing to do that, as can be told what we did with SJR 39. But I think things will go back to equilibrium and maybe already starting to right now and before the end of the session. But we don't mind being a deliberative body. And I'll just maybe echo what Representative Rizzo was saying about this committee. You know, we will have a two-tiered committee process. SJR didn't get to the second tier, but the purpose of each tier is to fully vet the bills. And I think that all the committee members did an absolutely great job on vetting this bill. High emotions, high feelings, high beliefs on both sides of this issue. And the chair, Elijah Hard, did a great job in letting everybody be heard and letting this bill be vetted. So.
Understand he came back to caucus to a standing ovation after it was all over.
And a well-deserved standing ovation. He did. He did. And we all, of course, our caucus wanted to talk about it. There was mixed feelings in our caucus. I mean, but I'll say this, that there's nobody in the Republican caucus that does not support religious freedom. And I'd venture to say that the same way on the other side of the aisle. And we just have a bill here that has that needed some balancing, and there are certainly individual freedoms we want to respect as well as we want to respect religious freedoms. And you know, maybe this turned out the way you liked, and maybe it turned out the way you didn't like as far as the bill moving forward. But I think that we all should sit back and take a look and be honest and say that the process worked.
It seems to me like this may be the last time in the Missouri legislature that the gay community is singled out and laws may be passed specifically aimed at them. And not that anybody's great moral champion, it just isn't politically popular anymore.
Yeah, well, I hope it's the last time. Let me say that first. I hope it's the last time. But I tend to agree with you. You know, I was in the committee, and I was one of the last people to speak when we had the hearing, the original hearing. And I saw a crowd of people that were just vehemently opposed to this. And I think that, the numbers, if you look at them today, are not what they were 10 years ago. Even amongst the Republican community, people are starting to, I wouldn't even say starting to, people understand equality now. And they understand that these issues are of singling people out over one thing or another are just absurd, in my opinion.
Roosevelt, it does to me look like that, A, time has moved on, but the real people, if you want to say that stepped up to kill the bill, was the business community, right? Their opposition seemed to have tipped the balance.
Well, if that may have helped the tipping balance or tipping sway with some. You know, I mean, obviously I never got the vote on it, but I certainly took their viewpoint into my consideration. Beyond the moral thing of being the hate state, as some would say, which I did not want us to be labeled, did not want us to be. You know, I'm a little bit more pro-economic development than maybe some others, and so that certainly hit home with me as well. But there's plenty of other groups that talked to me that held sway,
yeah,
too.
We'd luckily be joined by Sharon Jones with MATA. Before we move on to this topic, I want to get your take, but there is one thing that was mentioned a lot to me was this is never, no one's ever been sued over this. This is purely hypothetical in Missouri. If there had been a person, let's say there's a business owner who has an income tax receipt from tithing, he's in the church directory, who had tried to be gentlemanly and recommend somebody use another person, if that person is testifying in a committee, this is a radically different conversation, don't you think?
Well, I think it is, and you're exactly right. This isn't an issue in Missouri yet because sexual orientation and gender identity are not protected classes in the state of Missouri. And our organization fights to protect the laws as they exist now. And so currently we have been against the bills that would erode the current discrimination laws in Missouri. But again, sexual orientation and gender identity are not part of those laws. If they were, and I think this bill opens the door to that conversation, should they be protected classes? If they were, it's a very different conversation. You're absolutely right. But currently, in the state of Missouri, if you know the bakery example happened, there would be no cause of action because they are not protected classes.
So is that an argument to not make them protected classes?
I suppose it depends on which side of the issue you're on. You know, I mean, I think the same people who would have voted for SJR 39 would say we should never make them a protected class, and the people who would vote against it would say they should be a protected class because they are being discriminated against.
You know, Representative Boston, the last question is, we interviewed Bob Onder for This Week in Missouri Politics. Bob Onder is a good person. I don't think Bob Onder knew. There, it looked to me like, just from the popcorn gallery, there was some legislative deal craft that didn't work. I don't believe that some of the supporters he thought were talking to the business community actually were, or the business community were giving them feedback. It looked as though as this moved from the Senate to the House, the business community really got engaged, and that didn't happen in the Senate. I don't believe Bob Onder's a bad person. I think he had good intentions, right?
Oh, I absolutely believe that. I've spoken with Senator Onder many times. I think he's a genuine good man with a good heart. And I think you're right. This a lot of the uproar, if you will, or a lot of the opposition didn't arise until it crossed from the Senate to the House. I think that in the Senate committee, nobody spoke in opposition to it. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think there was little or no opposition spoken in the Senate committee, which just, to me, was amazing.
Speaking of Senate, Bill Kraft, Representative Rizzo, I think most folks assume next year this time you'll be Senator Rizzo.
Oh, hopefully. We'll see. Yeah. I got a long campaign ahead of me, but yes, hopefully.
It looked like that, I covered that myself that night. It looked like maybe some egos and some emotion got involved. And if the Republicans PQ voter ID, that's something they've worked for 10 years, has been part of the party. There's a logical case for it. There's some examples people can cite of voter fraud. I think that the minority might not have been surprised if at some point in a session that was PQ'd. This issue seemed to come up quickly, a little bit out of nowhere, and I think it set it on a really odd course by the Senate breaking the protocol and using the PQ there.
On the voter ID?
No, on SJR 39.
I couldn't agree more with what you said with Representative Austin. I don't think that Senator Onder realized, or the leadership in the Senate, the toxicity of what they were doing at the time. I think at the time they're probably looking at something that will get the base out for them in November, and to get their base out in November, and then it just exploded in their face, and they didn't realize the opposition that was out there to it, not just from LGBT community, but also the business community. And furthermore, I just, these types of issues, in my opinion, especially 39, are the issues that, in my opinion, nationally are just destroying the Republican Party. These issues are the reason why we're talking about Donald Trump being the presidential nominee. These issues are the reasons why there's such division, because they've gone from a party that used to be about business and pro-economic development to cultivating that hardcore religious right vote, and now they've kind of taken over the party. And I look forward to the days when we can get back to Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan working on stuff together instead of these extreme hard left and hard right.
Wasn't it always the possibility that when you made the hard right, religious right part of your party, that essentially at some point they'll turn on you?
I think we've seen it. I think we're watching it right now.
I watched this bizarre thing on Facebook. One of the supporters of it tried to blame the speaker for this bill failing, and it looked like the House leadership did all you could do to give it every opportunity to see if it could get support, and it just didn't get it.
Well, let me stick up for the speaker a little bit on that. As far as he certainly gave it every opportunity, as did the chair, Elijah Hart,
yeah.
Every opportunity to pass or to fail on its own merits. Could there have been some sort of skullduggery maneuvers?
Has that ever worked long term?
No, it never has. And I'll just tell you that our current speaker does not want to be known as a speaker that does that, as packing a committee or taking members off a committee or taking the bill away from committee and trying to, committee search and find the right one for it. That was the perfect committee for this type of bill, and it was given its proper due and its proper time, and I think the speaker handled it wonderfully and perfectly, just what he's supposed to do according to what I think the proper role of the speaker is.
Sharon, you've observed Missouri politics for some time. Do you think that the speaker learned lessons from other speakers about monkeying around, instead of trying to engineer a fair hearing, engineer an outcome? And then do you think the Senate will learn something from this? I mean, they PQ'd something, which is a relatively, at one point in Missouri history, was a rare thing, over something that died in a House subcommittee.
I agree with Representative Austin. I think Todd is trying to find a balance between leading his party and being heavy-handed with them. And remember, he comes from a family that was here, back in the days when there was 100 and however many Democratic supermajority. So I think he has looked back at the history and said, there are two ways to be speaker. You can either try to do everything by fiat and, roll over everybody and make them do what you want, or you can actually be a leader and listen to your caucus and listen to the members of the minority caucus and try to find a way to make Missouri work. And I think he does the latter.
One of the odd things coming out of this politically was it was the first time a Republican gubernatorial candidate came down on the other side of this issue in Eric Greitens. Kevin, also, you're from a very conservative part of the state. Do you believe Eric Greitens had a lot to lose? And do you think this will actually affect the governor's race come August?
Well, it certainly separates him from the herd.
Yeah.
And while I do come from a conservative area of the state, I know that Eric has a lot of support down there, as do the other candidates as well. So I think it separates him from the herd, and we'll see how that plays. From Southwest, I don't like the idea of saying that the votes come from St. Louis and Kansas City. But
well, in the Republican primary, they don't anymore,
they
right?
They don't. That's right. That's right. But I I'm saying that he's separated from the herd as if it was a political calculation on his part. I don't mean to intend that at all.
I don't think it was. He felt that way.
If he felt that way, he's speaking from the heart. Then I'm proud of him for doing it.
Representative Rizzo, you know some of these candidates for governor. Mm-hmm. Some of them, I believe, truly felt this way. I think some of them they are part of a party and they need to kind of go along. I don't think all the Republican candidates for governor truly believe legislation like this is meant for the 2016. I mean, I think there's some that kind of go along, right?
I don't think they did after they saw the business community come out, for sure. I mean, you know, I will say with Eric Greitens, I totally agree with Representative Austin. It separates him from the herd. And I think if you have three people, I think a lot of it depends on what happens with a spread. So if one of them ends up dominating, I don't think it makes much of a difference. Yeah. If the other three cut up a vote and, you know, Eric Greitens is sitting there as the lone voice out there, in my opinion, reason, I think it politically helps him. But I do agree. I mean, I don't know him personally. I've never really spoken with him. But if he firmly believes that way, I'm glad that he spoke out as a Republican.
Shane, it's a little odd in the governor's race to have tweets of support from Claire McCaskill and Mayor Slay. It kind of fits a narrative that some Republicans might have suspected going into this campaign about Eric Greitens.
You know, it's one of those things where I would like to think that in today's world we can support people across the aisle, but I do think it's interesting that that they were at being so publicly in support of him. And you know, Springfield is probably 50% of the Republican primary vote, but there's still a lot in the suburban areas in Kansas City and St. Louis. So I think it's a very interesting dynamic. And if, you know, the other four that are left in the race split the vote, he could come out on top for sure.
You know, going back to that, Representative Austin, like the Republican presidential primary, you have, you know, a St. Louis suburban vote that was pretty split. You had Southeast Missouri, their votes pretty much as a block most of the time, votes for Trump overwhelmingly. And Southwest Missouri was carried by Cruz. That may be, does that tell you anything about the governor's race and how that may unfold?
Well, I don't think so, really. You know, as far as, I've never understood, Trump was mentioned earlier in our conversation. I don't understand the Trump phenomena, to be honest with you. I can't explain that. Cruz, you know, is a very conservative and a very religious right candidate. So the religious right candidate, I think part of that plays very well Southwest. Mm-hmm. And, you know, but like I said, Eric Greitens has his support down there as well. And when I said earlier about proud that Eric spoke his heart on that issue, I'm the same way with the other candidates. As long as they're speaking the heart, the voters need to know how you feel about it, especially an issue like this that is say divisive, but it's very highly emotionally charged and runs very deep to a lot of our values, be it constitutional or personal freedom values.
You think it, you know, Representative Rizzo, there's something to be said though for allowing people to evolve and think about new things. The president's evolved on these issues throughout his presidency, just in the last seven years. I mean, it seems like you criticize people for learning, educating themselves, and having themselves grow intellectually. Sometimes that seems to be punished or thought or criticized.
Yeah, I mean, what we do down here is always a work in progress. And, you know, bills change from minute to minute, and to generalize exactly what we do or exactly what one law does or one thing does one day that could change the next day doesn't give people a lot of room to work on things. So a lot of times what ends up happening is people get put into a box and a bill gets blown up in the media and so on and so forth, and the only thing people back home sometimes know is they've heard that that's a bad bill. Well, they don't realize maybe that it's changed overnight. Yes. And it's gotten a lot better, and they you know, they're busy working and trying to provide for a family, and all they know is HB blah 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 is a bad bill. Well, maybe in a conference committee or in a on the floor got amended and now it's a good bill, so now you have to go back and re-educate people. But I think that happens a lot of times on issues like this. People get thrown into a box, and when you ask them general statements, they're absolutely no vehemently against it. But when you break it down to actually what the issue is, they're like, well, no, I'm okay with that. And you got to find a way to be able to evolve, like you said, if you need to on an issue.
I might add too, John, is that I agree with you totally on that. But also, it depends on some of where the news source is for the folks that are listening. Because you know, one group will put out something about HB XYZ and it's a terrible bill. Another group will say it's great. So it kind of depends who you're listening to. And you're right, they don't have time to, like us, listen to multiple sources and actually read the bill and work on it. So, and we do get put in a box in that regard. And so do our voters, our constituents, who kind of get put in a box depending on the news source they listen to. And as far as a bill evolving, sure, it absolutely does change. And that's what the committee process is there for. But I think you were also alluding to people change, their opinions and their and how they look at things. And yeah, every person's a work in progress.
Yeah.
And as a group, I think the state of Missourians are as a group are a work in progress, just as all Americans are. So
speaking,
it's okay to change your mind.
Speaking of amendments, you the House loaded up some Senate bills this week. My goodness.
Well, you know, we have House bills that are House priorities and some important stuff that the House would like to get done. Couldn't get it all done last year because of some issues over on the other side of the building. So we find these Senate bills to be perfect maybe vehicles to put these priorities on.
Representative Rizzo, you look at the Senate comes over this year, and they were even public about you can't amend this. You can't amend our legislation. That's a terrible precedent. I mean, you have the same leadership come back in the House and the Senate. If the Senate can walk over the House and say you can't amend our bills, that's a bad precedent. I think even from Deal Craft, the Speaker may have done good holding his ground for next session. But last year, the Senate did another PQ. Two PQs, not one piece of state policies changed. But a lot of things you probably voted against are killed. You got to go home. If you go back to Kansas City in May and the Senate blows up again, that's not the worst thing in the world, right?
No, it's not the worst thing in the world for us. No, not at all. I mean, you know, being in the super minority when we're not in session is the best time for us. I mean, when we're here, we're working on Republican majority legislation, which I will say sometimes isn't bad, and I think we can agree on some stuff, but the majority of stuff we will probably agree on. We play a lot of defense down here, and you don't have to play defense if the game's not going on. So,
Sherry, do you think there's a Senate summer caucus somewhere where they're like, okay, so we've done these big PQs that generally we like to think we're better than, and we've not changed one comma of state policy, but we've killed a bunch of other stuff we wanted to do anyway?
You know, I think a few years ago that very well could have happened. There's an interesting phenomenon going on right now where the Senate is made up of people who were very recently in the House. And so a lot of those old traditional, quote-unquote, Senate values that used to be in existence about trying to find compromise, about being the more deliberative body, things like that, aren't really the case anymore. Now it's really just a smaller House in a lot of respects. And I think that's a dangerous thing to set. I think it's a dangerous precedent. And I think what you mentioned and what Representative Austin mentioned is exactly right. There's a lot of good legislation that's going to die because people are being heavy-handed and not trying to find a way to work together.
Well, I'll ask both of you. I think there's a lot of folks think both of you may be in the Senate in the not-too-distant future. Serving in the House and watching them blow themselves up now maybe 2 years in a row and get nothing done, is that something you've learned from sitting on the other side of the building?
Well, I'd say so, and you know, I might counter what John said about it's okay for him to kill some stuff. I'm okay with that too. You know, we got maybe some folks argue that we got too many laws on the books as it is. But when you mentioned dangerous precedent, yeah, we need to be thinking about that, don't we?
Yes, absolutely.
So a couple bills that did go through the House this week were collateral source and expert witness. Couple of bills I don't think Sharon is all that fond of.
Not fond of at all.
Give us like the cliff notes on what those two are from your perspective.
So from our perspective, expert witness is basically a way for a very well-funded defendant to keep new but quality science out of courtroom. And we've seen it throughout the years that a industry can fund research and build a body of scientific evidence, and then if an independent person comes in and has contradictory scientific evidence, they aren't really part of the general body of scientific knowledge, so they're not considered an expert on the federal level. Missouri's law right now is great because it says we look at the qualifications of the individual, and if they are qualified to speak on that subject, they can testify as to whatever they want within that subject matter. Federal law does the opposite and says it doesn't matter what your qualifications are. If what you are saying is part of the scientific evidence, we'll let you say it.
Representative Austin, I thought Senator Sifton had an interesting thing. He says, well, we don't want to be more like Washington, do we?
Yeah.
In a lot of respects, we don't, you know, but sometimes you got to, I almost like give the devil his due, but, I mean, I think the Republican caucus felt that the standard set in federal court as far as the Dapper standard allows for extra to be more fully vetted, as we like to say about bills, and so that's why we were supportive of that.
Representative Rizzo, you had, what, almost 30 Republicans join in voting no on that?
Yeah.
The governor will probably hold a parade when he vetoes it as soon as he can. This isn't going to become lots. A bit of a win that even took this long in session to pass, right?
Oh, I would say so. I would say the best thing that came out of this, that bringing that bill up, was the invoking of My Cousin Vinny.
Yes.
on the House floor. I agree with Sharon. I don't think it's a great bill at all. But we did have some interesting debate when we were talking about the Marissa Tomei character being qualified expert witness in...
Interestingly, that movie was made before they changed the federal standard. So that was under the old federal standard, which is the current Missouri standard.
I personally consider Marissa Tomei an expert, and I think that helped exonerate those two innocent young men right down in the South. So,
with class and aplomb.
Just to wrap up here, Evers and Austin, and so there's a Republican governor, these bills don't become law, do they?
I don't think either one do, yeah. Collateral Source obviously got more votes.
Sure.
John and I were talking beforehand, we couldn't remember exactly what it was, 92, 93 maybe. So it's a long ways from a veto proof or, you know, number.
Last thing, a couple predictions from you. You admit you don't understand the Trump phenomenon. I don't understand the Carly Fiorina thing unless it's just changing the subject of, it seems a little pie in the sky to start naming a VP pick when you're losing all the time. I mean, if you're John Kasich, like, Tuesday's the new Monday for you, right? I mean, every Tuesday you just get cream somewhere. I would just start not even wanting to wake up on Tuesday morning.
Well, you know, I said I didn't understand the Trump phenomena, but I better start understanding. Because I don't... I'm not a gambling guy, but if I had to put some money on it, I'd say he doesn't have to go to a second round at the convention.
Representative Rizzo, in the best case scenario, the Republicans, he gets the most votes and they don't give it to him, and he destroys them for three cycles.
I think either way, it helps us as Democrats. If Donald Trump gets the nominee, I think it would be a terrible thing for Republicans to have him at the top of the ticket. I think if they steal it from him, he runs as a third party candidate, and we're good in that situation.
We share some very good friends in Eastern Jackson County, and some of them I think might take to the way he speaks, and it might ring home a little bit to some folks in Eastern Jackson County. Not so much his policies, which I don't really even know what they all are.
I don't know if anybody is.
But the style that he speaks does speak to a lot of Americans who don't have a lot of faith in the political process.
Yeah, there are people out there that are angry and upset, and to discredit them and to just scoff is not probably the right thing to do. The question is, do they make up enough to win an election? And we're going to find
that out. It looks like probably not, right?
Yeah, and we're going to find that out with Donald Trump. But it doesn't mean that, they should be ignored. But the plain talk has definitely been ruling the Republican primary so far.
Sharon, I think that we would all agree you would be an expert witness on what a woman would think amongst this group here.
Well, I do have the requisite qualifications.
I'm not a judge, but I would qualify you as an expert. It looks to me like there's no matter what he does, it's going to be hard. And part of it is that style, possibly, but it's going to be hard to not... Republicans don't generally win the women vote. He's going to get crushed, right?
You know, I think so, and unless he gets a little bit of control over his filters, I don't think he's going to have a lot of women who want to vote for him, just because, and not necessarily his style, because a lot of women are also tired of politics, and tired of the pandering, and tired of speaking out both sides of your mouth, but he also just says things that make you cringe, or at least make me cringe as a woman. And until he can get control over that...
But in the age of YouTube, I mean, you're both elected officials, in the age of YouTube and camera phones and 24-hour news cycles, let's assume he never said anything else that was cringeworthy.
Right.
It's kind of... I mean, the tape's already in the can, right? I mean, it's over.
That's true. Yeah.
Oh, I think he's a great entertainer.
Yeah.
I think he's an awful candidate, and I think the things that he says are reprehensible, but... I think it's the best reality show we've seen in a very long time.
Would he not have been, Representative Austin, a great thing for to energize the party to come in second and then go on and fade off into the sunset? And now that's not the case.
Oh, I don't know that I want to speculate. But, you know, there is something there. Like I admitted earlier that I couldn't put my finger on it. There's something there. You know, I was a Marco Rubio guy. Yeah. You know, to my sons, you know, I talk to them about this. I come home 4 weeks ago, and my son's truck in the driveway has a Trump bumper sticker on it. Mm-hmm. So our conversation is ongoing, too. So why, you know, and why do you think? So, you paint a scenario that if Marco Rubio was the first guy, I'd think, hey, that's a great idea, you know. But it's not that way. We're just going to deal with what it is.
And the last topic, we'll talk about some of these down-ballot races really briefly as we close. Before we do, I want to thank again the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce for sponsoring the Mole Edge Podcast and the Missouri Farm Bureau and our folks at KMOX for partnering with us on this. But there will be new people come out. The data shows new people come out in a primary. They'll definitely come out in a general, you would have to assume. And they vote Trump. Will they not stick around and vote for four or five more Republicans while they're there?
I would hope so. If they're voting for Trump, they'll vote for Republicans. But if they're voting for whoever, I hope they're voting for Republicans. Because if you look at it, that's kind of the way it is right now, at least in the state of Missouri, especially. I mean, except for Peter Kinder, we have Democrats of the statewide offices, and then we have overwhelming majorities in the House and Senate. So maybe we just got independent thinking voters here in Missouri.
That's probably true. Do you think Representative Rizzo? There's an independent streak in Missouri.
Oh, I mean, I think we have a supermajority Republican legislature, and the top of the ticket is majority,
a supermajority of statewide office holders.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, I definitely think that there is an independent voter out there.
Give me a prediction. Does a form of the SJR 39, maybe the House Bill 2000, the clergy portion, get put in a piece of legislation that passes this year?
And goes to the ballot?
No, it just goes into statute.
I think it's possible. I mean, we've seen stranger things happen in the last 2 weeks of session, but I believe that the Senate, even the Senate Dems, said that they would have agreed to that if they would have amended it over there. So maybe it's possible. I wouldn't rule anything out this time of year.
Jim, give me a prediction. If Donald Trump's a nominee, does it affect Missouri?
I don't know. You know, I don't know if you knew this, but I actually grew up in Springfield, very religious, conservative, fundamental Baptist. I don't see any of my family members voting for Donald Trump. I really, truly don't. And they may hold their nose and do it because they're good Republican voters. But honestly, I think that we've got enough evangelicals in this state who see him as, you know, a New York, maybe not a New York liberal, but definitely.
So they just don't vote?
They either don't vote or they don't vote for president.
I mean, you could probably fit all the people excited about Hillary Clinton in the Clinton living room.
Yeah.
Maybe just the Clinton, like, dining room or kitchen, even. Or maybe, like, a phone booth a block down the street from the Clinton house. And I think I'm a hillbilly from West Butler County, and my dad's a small business owner, and he'll vote for Trump, and he'll, like, push it in and make sure the chain is totally pushed. And so I think you're right. I don't know that some of them vote for him. Yeah. But my dad would have also voted for the most boring candidate ever, Mitt Romney. And, and he wasn't thrilled about it, but he did it.
But boring is different than offensive. And I think Trump, and at least the way he has been in his past as a business owner before he started running for president, is a turnoff for a lot of evangelical Christians, I think.
Hey, Representative Boston, I think it was hard to have a person who's been on the cover of Playboy be the Republican nominee for president. But there is something to be said for that small business owner that doesn't have a lot of confidence and isn't that thrilled about government. And, I mean, I think when Mitt Romney got the nomination, most folks felt like he had extremely little chance to win an election. I mean, he's like the Hillary Clinton of Republicans. Just no one was excited about his 8-point plan on something that no one in any faith would ever even get to point to. I think there is a chance. I don't understand it either, but I think not many people do. Who knows what he'll do? I think that Hillary Clinton knows how to beat Ted Cruz. I think John Casey's a little different, but Donald Trump will come out and say, you should be in jail. What David Petraeus went to jail, you should be in jail. Mitt Romney would have took 20 minutes to say nothing about it. Donald Trump was like, you should be in prison right now. I think that there is something that I don't understand either that has a small chance to connect with people. Let's say there's a terrorist attack next fall. Events can intervene, those October surprises, and Donald Trump might win, where I think, name me a Republican that could.
Yeah, no, I don't know that you could, and you kind of said it right. I think if Hillary Clinton is playing poker with Mitt Romney, she knows what cards he's playing, and the same goes with Cruz. With Donald, I mean, you don't know what he's holding, and that deck has a lot of wild cards.
You assume he falls off that high wire act, but maybe he makes it to the other side, right?
Yeah, and I'll go, but yeah, I come from conservative Baptist background too, Springfield, and so I don't see a lot of my family, unlike my youngest son, is not as excited about Trump as he is, maybe. But I think the question is, will they go to the polls or not? If they go to the polls, I think they punch Trump, because I just don't think they can punch Hillary. But will it be enough?
Where's the Rizzo last question? There's in the eight blocks here, as we broadcast from the state capitol. Yeah, even the Republicans here don't like Donald Trump. They can't stand him. However, there's a guy turning a wrench a few blocks up the street here on Missouri Boulevard who doesn't like the Republicans much, but he might actually show up and vote for Trump where he wouldn't have voted before. Does that worry the Democrats at all?
Well, I mean, I think that's the ultimate question you have is, as we said earlier, the kind of talk and the speak and the anger is so much. I mean, it's only so much of the vote, and does that translate enough?
Well,
is that
it,
guy down the street?
You're from the city that, I don't know if it was a Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton event, you had to cancel it because nobody would show up. In an age of that, if you have a Donald Trump event in Kansas City, I mean, you have more protesters than she has supporters show up. Is there a worry that could connect? Maybe not in a state senate race like you're in, but for does a Chris Koster worry that something he's saying connects with people? And it does develop that wave.
What do you mean?
I mean, in an age where the Democratic Party's nominee couldn't even have an event in Kansas City because people wouldn't show up to it.
I think, in my opinion, Chris Koster, who's done an outstanding job, and I hope that the Hillary campaign will eventually, I mean, they'll work together and so on and so forth, but I think Chris runs standalone. I think he might overshadow Hillary Clinton in the state of Missouri because he's going to do such a great job, in my opinion, but... at some point, I think that they work together, but I don't think if, say, Hillary does have a lack of support, which is what you're saying, and I don't see that, but if Hillary has a lack of support in the state of Missouri, I don't think that affects Chris Koster. I think Chris has done a great job getting out and talking to people, and one thing we've seen in the state of Missouri is people really vote on, you know, the person that they meet and the person that they believe in.
I think if Chris Koster had a rally just outside this window on the Capitol steps and Hillary Clinton had one on the other side of the steps, there'd be more people at Chris Koster's.
I would believe that. I think that's possible right now.
Doesn't Jen? The last question is: it looks to me like to beat Chris Koster, Republicans need a wave in Missouri. The drag on maybe the female vote that Donald Trump won't get makes sure that even if he carries Missouri, which I'll be the one that predicts, the simple hillbilly from West Butler County says Donald Trump wins Missouri, but not by 10 points, more like 2 or 3, and that's probably not enough to beat Chris Koster, right?
I don't think it's enough to beat Chris Koster, and I think, you know, Representative Rizzo's right. Koster is running as his own person. He's not running as part of a larger Democratic ticket. And I think what you said is right. Missouri is a lot of independent voters who may vote for Trump as president and then will vote for Chris Koster as governor.
Last thing, Representative Austin, you had the ethics bill signed by the governor today. Have you ever had anybody in Springfield come up to you at the coffee shop and talk about these ethics deals? Have you had anybody outside these eight blocks of the Capitol talk about that?
You know, I have not. They may talk about, what do you do about the lobbyists up there?
When you cut taxes.
Well, I may get plenty of that too, you know. But no, never had any. But I think it's still, just because I've had some people talk to me in the coffee shop in Springfield, it was still necessary. And I think we did some good ethics bills this year.
Okay. I want to thank our Representative Kevin Austin. Thank you so much for hosting us.
Thank you for being here. Always a pleasure. Come back every Thursday.
Yeah, he says that. He doesn't mean that. Sheriff Jones with Madden, thank you so much for being here. Representative Rizzo, we really appreciate you making the time. And we'll see you guys next week live from the state capitol for the Mole Edge podcast.